the local lore was that they enacted this ban at the request of the United States Navy because they feared that its sailors, when they were visiting Key West, might obtain ill-advised tattoos. So that was the city's lore. When the city went into federal court to argue that their restriction on tattoo parlors in their historic district, they gave a couple of bases for the rationale. The first one was that given their historic district's history, that tattoo establishments are inconsistent with the district's historic character. And they said, and I quote, the city also fears that rash tourists, i.e. drunk, will obtain regrettable tattoos, leading to negative association with Key West. Now, anyone in this room who has a tattoo, I can't be the only one, you've either gotten a regrettable tattoo or you've been with a friend when they've gotten a regrettable tattoo. It's part of tattooing. But if you want to articulate a more content-based restriction or rationale than we're worried that this will be a regrettable tattoo, and so therefore we're going to ban tattoos in our historic district, you can't come up with a more content-based rationale if you tried. So one of our jobs as lawyers is to steer our clients out of the courthouse as much as possible. Now, because I'm a litigator, I'm happy if you want to steer them my way. But usually we want to try and avoid that. So in this case, this was a 2015 case. This was out of the 11th Circuit. And in 2015, this was a case of first impression for the 11th Circuit. First time in the 11th Circuit that they held that tattooing and the act of tattooing is protected under the First Amendment. Now, I don't mean this speech to be entirely about tattooing, but it's an important concept, okay, because you are, if you represent a city, you are going to be approached by your counsel with the issue du jour, and someone is going to be upset about something. And it is our job, as much as we can, while we are not the policymakers, it is our job to steer them as best we can in a direction that doesn't plainly, facially violate the First Amendment. So, with that, I'll now begin my PowerPoint. So, the first case I'm going to talk about on the PowerPoint is who in here has heard of George Carlin? Okay. So George Carlin, one of his more famous bits is something called the filthy words. Raise your hand if you know the seven filthy words. Anybody? Okay, a couple of you. The rest of you are liars. George Carlin gave a monologue of the filthy words before a live audience, and that was broadcast. And so the FCC challenged that and attempted to censor it, basically. And what the court did was that it talked about it based it for, first of all, let me get cut to the chase. The court upheld the restriction on Carlin's monologue, okay? Because of the time and that it was given in an afternoon on one of the three channels at the time. And so, and in reliance in part on their opinion, they quoted Justice Murphy, who said, I'm not wearing my monocle right now, so you'll have to excuse, such utterances are no essential part of any exposition of ideas and are of such slight social value as a step of truth to truth that any benefit that might be derived from them is clearly outweighed by the social interest in order and morality. Now, if you tell me that this is content-neutral viewpoint that was expressed and relied on by Justice Murphy, I tell you, you're a liar. But that was the basis. This is a 1978 case. So, based on its perceived lack of social value. You know, court said, well, you know, someone's lyrics are another's vulgarity. These are vulgar words. And so we're going to uphold that restriction. But here's what they did. Don't tell me these guys don't have a sense of humor, because what they did was they included as an appendix to the opinion of the court the entire transcribed monologue from George Carlin. And it's right here. So if you go to Westlaw and you search term the seven filthy words, you'll find them. Don't tell me they don't have a sense of humor. So, all right, what can you do? Well, regulations enacted for the purpose of restraining speech or presumptively violate the First Amendment. What you can do, though, is you can enact so-called content-neutral time, place, manner regulations. They have to serve a substantial governmental interest, and they can't unreasonably limit alternative avenues of communication. This is the city of Renton versus Playtime Theaters. You'll notice that many of these cases, the plaintiff or defendant in these will have some kind of a slightly risque name. It's because a lot of these are sexually oriented businesses. That's where a lot of these cases come from. And it is cities enacting regulations, either zoning or something like that, in order to restrict where and when and how those types of establishments can operate.